And hello, hello again, America. Welcome to another episode of the C Report. I'm your host, Mr. C, also known as Michael Aaron Kotsidis. Today is actually, because I'm going to be 100% 100 with you guys, today is Monday, March 20th, 2023, and I am your host. Again, Mr. C. Welcome to the C Report. Can you see it yet? America is awake. Now, I'm going to be totally honest with you guys as we get into today's episode, because those of you whom are tuning into today's episode, if you're hanging out with us over at Spotify or any of the podcast platforms that this show is available, if you're hanging out with us over at Rumble or over at pill.net, thank you for checking out today's episode. I just got to say, you know, this episode was intended to have been released over the weekend. A lot of things going on over the weekend, actually. So I couldn't exactly get it out. And now here I am today. The episode in question, because I kind of set you guys up with a little bit of a menu or a bit of a syllabus about some of the upcoming episodes and some of the topics that I wanted to talk about. But, you know, there's so many things going on right now. And I keep saying that, of course, but, you know, not to be generic and not to be pretentious, but, you know, there are a bit of a thing. So, you know, there's a, you know, it's interesting the information that comes across one's desk, one could say, ladies and gentlemen, is not just across one's desk per se, but across their computer screen, you know, and, the hot ticket here, of course, is the topic that we've been talking about for the last few episodes, whether intermittently or not. You know, there's still a lot of things that I've kind of got to say about, like, for example, like what was going on with Tucker Carlson and the January 6th committee. And, you know, I was on, I think, either Truth Social or Twitter today. And someone had asked the question, which I thought was actually a valid's not the right word. It was actually like a question worth considering. And the question was, what happened to the January 6th footage that was released on Tucker Carlson like a week or two ago or whatever? We're not hearing anything about that. Why did that go out of the news cycle? You know, why did that? I mean, hello. I mean, it totally broke down the doors of every single lie that these anti-American communist, you know, are they communist or communist sympathizers? I don't know. I don't know what they are at this point. They're one or the other, right? I think they're communists. But anyways, America, what I am trying to say here is, you know, in the midst of all of that, ladies and gentlemen, where are they? You know, America has fallen, right? They've stolen elections, okay? The people can see it, you know? Never at any point in American history, and I'll say it, and you go back to in my days with the Q&A holes, right? Before I was solo with the C Report. Been saying it. First to say, but doesn't matter. You know, we are at a point in our history where this stuff has never been more in our face clear, and we have never been more awake and active and ready to restore our republic. You know, we have that understanding. We are engaged in very great tropes and slopes, ladies and gentlemen, that reverberate with the innate idealisms of liberty and freedom, people are understanding. I mean, take, for example, per the Twitter files, ladies and gentlemen, what we watched on March 9th, 2023. That's right. Now we're more than 10 days removed, right? You know? Wherein we saw the Democrat pawns of the establishment just go bat crazy and in on individuals who, politically speaking, in the world of labels and identifications, relate and identify closer to the Democrats than anyone else that was sitting on that panel. Now, what panel am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the subcommittee on the weaponization of the FBI and other federal agencies. Now, that's what the interesting thing was here, because, you know, I mentioned to you guys that I wanted to share with you guys some hearings on my Rumble page. Okay. We started with the Jacqueline Brager 5-hour Arizona armpit election integrity hearing, right? Okay. And there was a couple of other hearings I wanted to share with you all on my Rumble page for archival purposes. And then, you know, just also because it builds on what I want to share with you guys here at the show. So you can reference it at any point that you would like to. Now, incidentally, the first the other hearing that I wanted to share with you guys was the first hearing on the weaponization of the FBI and other federal agencies. Little did I realize, America, that this Twitter hearing, wherein we had the journalists from the Twitter files, Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, come before this subcommittee and basically get abused and raped and threats of extortion. They just treated Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger like they were the red-headed stepchild, which that, what would that be now? Would that be like a non-politically correct? The red-headed stepchild. Well, I don't know. Was the red-headed stepchild, I guess they were a gender, but were they Scottish or Irish? Anyways, I mean, then you take it to race. Anyways, guys, let's not get caught up in that. But, you know, they treated Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger like they were damn dirty fascists, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, let's just say what it was that we witnessed. You had this Democrat delegate representative, or however you say it, from the United States Virgin Islands. You know, she has no voting power in Congress, but I guess I don't know if this woman's like, you know, like a big mic. You know what I mean? Right. But they had this woman here as the ranking member of the committee that, again, is the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, chaired by Jim Jordan of Ohio. People in this audience generally know who Jim Jordan is. No introduction needed, but he's chairing it. And, you know, that's a good thing in my opinion, because if you think about the power of the Speaker of the House, the Speaker of the House is the dude who appoints who is going to be in charge of the committees, otherwise known as the chair of the committee, right? You know, and that takes me back down to Texas politics, because, like, you know, it's the perfect reflection. If the Speaker of the House for the federal government of the United States of America in Washington, D.C., has the same perfunctions as the Speaker of the House for the state of Texas, then we could possibly be in deep shit. Why do you think that we were in such shit with such speakers as Nancy Piglosi, ladies and gentlemen? Because they have the authority to appoint which individual will be in charge of a committee? And of course, if you've been listening to my podcast in the last 6 months or so, or you know your civic lessons of how your state and your federal government work, then you know that that individual who is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, not the Senate, that's totally different, right? Can appoint which individual will be in charge of a committee, and a committee is in charge of a topic like education or elections or abortion or health or war spending, you know, and the chair ultimately can steer that committee. And quite often in state politics, we can see that clearer than daylight. But, you know, I mean, we can see how the chair steers the committee. But there are other tricks to the game, like the chair of the calendars committee. But that's another state level thing. Is it perfunctory in our federal government's functions? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you'd have to know how government works. But to be certain, with someone like Jim Jordan chairing the subcommittee on weaponization of the federal government, you can rest assured that they're going to dig a little bit deeper than a Democrat would. As an example here, you had Representative Delegate of the U.S. Virgin Islands, Stacey Plaskett, just totally going in on the witnesses because they were witnesses called by her political opponents from the other side of the aisle. But the witnesses themselves are not registered Republicans. So, you know, the entire hearing here was made the topic of red and blue, Democrat and Republican, establishment rhino party, uniparty. They're both controlled by the same people anyways. Pretty naked. It made it pretty naked because the Democrats have to feign a fake argument just for the sake of the argument. And some of these politicians are not equipped with the wherewithal to invest and internalize the beliefs enough. In other words, most of these people probably don't even give a damn. Like Plaskett, you could tell she doesn't give a damn. Stacey Plaskett does not give a motherfucking damn about the hearing, about what she's fighting for, about nothing. All she cares about is carrying out the mission of whomever put her in that position and is paying her. That's all she cares about. You can tell whenever you have that exchange where I believe Matt Taibbi corrects her because she says he's a supposed journalist. Okay. Now, you know, as someone who is a Trump supporter and as someone who has more conservative values on paper, because after all, I live my life not as such, you know. On paper, my life is not conservative if it's mapped out, but my values are. Does that make sense? You know? So, like, people like I don't know Schellenberger and Taibbi. I know Taibbi wrote for Rolling Stone. I know many people that I admire that have written for Rolling Stone. I know I used to be a subscriber when I was younger. And, you know, so I'm just saying, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just saying, you have someone like this Plaskett woman going in on these individuals as if though they were something that was totally opposition polarized, DEFCON kamikaze. Like, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous the way that they were addressed. Like I said, she called them so-called journalists. But, I mean, these people have proven themselves in their work, you know? In fact, I wanted to share with you all since we're doing this, you know, because I attempted to share the actual hearing for this on my Rumble page, and I still might do it, you know, because I want to keep it for reference, but I wasn't able to stream it to my Rumble, you know. So I actually was considering reading to you guys the opening statements from Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger. Because again, you know, my audience and myself and other people in the same type of, you know, field, we've known everything that the Twitter files revealed. Okay. These were just the receipts that we needed to prove that we were not conspiracy theorists, but in fact, somehow knew the truth, right? Isn't that interesting, though? Like, you know, basically what Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger did in their work, and the other journalists involved, basically proved that we are not conspiracy theorists, because we have known about this basically since it happened, ladies and gentlemen. But the function of Taibbi and Schellenberger and the other journalists involved, I think, particularly because they are left of center, at least, you know, as far as the generic line is concerned, and they are not conservative Trump supporters or Republican, you know, was, and that was actually what one of the a viewer of my show said to me, was like, well, had you ever thought, Mr. C, that perhaps the role of Matt Taibbi was to bring the left into the truth? And that, I believe, is a far truer statement than not, because they're awake now and they have people on their side of the aisle, people who disdain Trump. Mr. Taibbi, if you all remember the episode we did on Matt Taibbi and on what was the name of the woman? Barry Weiss, right? These people are totally anti-Trump, but they were invited by the subcommittee. They came and they testified, ladies and gentlemen, under oath, okay, about their findings in this investigation, which is what it is. And it is absolutely deplorable, the amount of time and energy that the Democrat Party spent trying to frame this information drop that is the Twitter files that has been released by journalists, investigative journalists and reporters. You know, they spent so much time trying to partisanize it, to obfuscate the actual information being released behind the veil of party politics was disgusting. When the party of the people, which used to be the Democrat Party, that used to speak about your ability to have your First Amendment rights and all of the above, and I know because, as that affluent white woman told me when I was 21, you're probably a Democrat because you're Hispanic and not rich or white. And that's just not true in 2023 today. So I wanted to actually memorialize on the C Report the opening statements from Mr. Schellenberger and Mr. Taibbi. And I think we should, and we'll do that now. So we'll start with Mr. Schellenberger. And I was actually okay, because, you know, Mr. Taibbi And I'm sure if you guys were to reference the Sea Report episode where I talked to you guys about his origins and his disdain for Trump, you know, like, great, whatever, Taibbi, you're fighting for, you have integrity, sir. Okay. I still ask the question, with all due respect, where the hell were you in 2020, 2018, 2019, right, Taibbi and Schellenberger? But to their point, as testified, as reflected in the record, they believed that there was Russian collusion. They believed that Trump was an agent of Russia. They believed everything that the MSM said it was, until they were shown the documentation, the communications of the very people themselves that censored and influenced an election, so to speak. There were a lot of influence operations running in 2020. Let me tell you what. I'm not even one to speak about that stuff. All I could speak about is what I saw and what I know. But Mr. Schellenberger's opening statement actually brought it all the way back down to, was it President Truman? No, Eisenhower, right? About the military-industrial complex. Well, Mr. Schellenberger and Mr. Taibbi have coined a new complex, the censorship industrial complex. Very interesting. But Mr. Schellenberger's opening statement went this way. The members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting my testimony. The 1961 farewell address President Ike Eisenhower warned of, quote, unwarranted influences by the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower feared the size and power of the complex of government contractors, and defense departments could endanger our liberties or democratic processes. Through co-domination of the nation's scholars, budget allocations, and power of money public policy, they would become captive of the technological elite. Eisenhower's fears were well-founded. Today, American taxpayers are unwittingly financing the growth and power of the censorship industrial complex run by America's scientific and technology. Now, that's a very interesting statement if you actually think about it and analyze it a bit. Today, American taxpayers are unwittingly financing the growth and power of the censorship industrial complex. They use our money against us. You guys may not have realized that for long, but you realize it now. Think about, like, National Public Radio. Think about a public broadcasting station, where they're grooming and they're using our money against us to talk to us about, First Amendment stuff that they're trying to abolish and Second Amendment stuff that they want to do away with. They're using our money against us, but it's not even just as that. I mean, it's so much deeper than that, but this is just a scratch of the surface. And it's very interesting to see, because this is the kind of conversation that you would more than expect to see in a right-wing extremist patriot Trump supporting America First, Save America, Make America Great Again, MAGA movement, MAG hat type of chat room. You don't expect to see this kind of testimony coming from the left under oath in a hearing in Washington, D.C., which is why, in my opinion, this is a little bit of historical going on here. Is it part of the Matrix? Is it part of a bigger show? Probably. It probably is. We could talk about that, right? About, like, how they just wanted to use Musk to unify the people underneath the right, so this way they could destroy the left, but it's still the same bird. So anyways, let's get back to Mr. Schellenberger's opening statement. He says, It's the censorship industrial complex that is being run by America's scientific and technology, which endeavors, which is, what have we talked about here at Mr. CTV, whether it was on the C Report or C in the Dark? We talked about the Scientology, the we talked about the transhumanism. That is exactly what he's talking about right here. The scientific and the technology, the technocrats and the scientists, the science. What was it called? It was in Scientology. But anyways, technocracy. You know, all of this goes back to the same characters and figures. He says it endangers our liberties. And I'm grateful for this opportunity to offer this testimony and sound the alarm on the shocking and disturbing emergence of state-sponsored censorship in the United States of America. The Twitter files investigative reporters have revealed a larger growing network of government agencies and academic institutions and non-governmental organizations that are actively censoring American citizens, often without their knowledge, on a range of issues. I do not know how much censorship is coordinated beyond what we have been able to document, and I will not speculate, but I recognize a lot allows Twitter to moderate content on their platforms. And I support the right of government to communicate, including to dispute inaccurate information to government officials, have been caught repeatedly pushing social media platforms to censor disfavored use of content. Often these acts of censorship that in the legal up section today, government officials, it raises serious First Amendment questions. Axiomatic that the government can't do or limited from doing directly. Moreover, we know the U.S. government has funded pressuring and social media platforms and refused to censor for spread information including alleged conspiracy theories. The University of Washington, the Atlantic Council Digital Research Lab has been adequately set aside the Department of Defense, CIA, and other intelligence agencies. They work with multiple U.S. government agencies and institutionalized censorship research and advocacy with dozens of other universities, think tanks. It's important to understand how these groups function. They are not publicly engaged with an open exchange of ideas, asking for national debate over the First Amendment, rather than creating blacklists of disfavored people and pressuring, controlling, and demanding media platforms that amplified the censorship establishment's methods of psychological manipulation, some developed by the military during the global war on terror, with highly sophisticated tools, including artificial intelligence, and leaders are driven by their fears on the internet, of the internet and social media platforms, empower fringe personalities, which they regard as destabilizing. The federal government officials, agencies, and contractors have gone from fighting ISIS recruiters to Russian bots to deplatforming ordinary Americans in favor of public figures. Importantly, the bar for bringing the and military-grade government monitoring and techniques have moved from, quote, counterterrorism to countering extremism to countering simple misinformation, otherwise known as being wrong on the internet, to that the government no longer needs a predicate for as an extremist deploy resources to counter political activity. Only predicated need is the assertion of the opinion expressed on social media and has run through these efforts to extend so influencing interacting conventional news media organizations. In 1970, when the Washington Post and selected classified Pentagon papers of the war in Vietnam, journalists have understood. Hey, blah, 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 blah. In 1970, when the Washington Post NERCs and selected the classified Pentagon papers of the war in Vietnam journalists have understood, we have a professional petition to report on these documents that contents are in the public interest. In 2020, the Aspen Institute and Policy Center urge journals to quote rate the Pentagon Papers principle and not cover leaked information to revamp the spread of disinformation. Government-funded centers prevent the world harm to justify their needs for censorship. They define harm for more expensively than a Supreme Court, far more expansively than the Supreme Court, that the goals delegitimize this government until the industrial and news media organizations. That mandate is so sweeping it can easily censor criticism from any part of the status quo and elected officials to institutionalize the commerce immediately, cut off funding to the sponsors, and investigate activity. They should mandate into reporting of all conversations between social media executives and government employees and government contractors, and Congress should limit the broad mission and given to social media platforms to censor the platforms and spread propaganda. And that was his opening statement. But, you know, I was rather impressed with the fact that he went so hard talking about the military-industrial complex, naming a censorship industrial complex, calling out all of these agencies, testifying to the truth of what they have done, which has been a fact that they have used to paint people like myself and those in my audience as conspiracy theorists. But now the left is seeing the same side, and there are people on the left as deep into their beliefs as there are patriots and Trump supporters. And they're really going to have to stop and consider to themselves the depth of the truth. You know, that feeling at the back of their head that they always knew something was wrong and something was going on, but they didn't know it was something is going on. I could feel it. I could feel something, but I didn't know what it was. And now the doors are open, ladies and gentlemen, because of a hearing as such and the maneuvering that came about here. Now, Mr. Taibbi said, Chairman Jordan, Ranking Member Plaskett, thank you. Thank you, Burhi Me Today. My name is Matt Taibbi. I've been a reporter for 30 years and a staunch advocate of the First Amendment. Much of that time was at Rolling Stone magazine. Ranking Member Plus, I'm not a so-called journalist. I won the National Magazine Award for Independent Journalism and have written 10 books, including 4 New York Times bestsellers. And I'm now an online editor. I'm here to, oh, you know, and that was the thing that I had to say there too, because that's when, you know, when I'm saying that these people on the left are fake, like the Democrats, like you would think that as an elected representative of these United States of America, that you would have some sense of respect, decorum, okay? Decorum. Let's just say decorum, right? But respect, decorum, you know, and pride, right? In your position, that when someone is speaking to you at a hearing, and particularly after you have lambasted them with untruths, lies, and insults, that you would pay attention and listen to the words of your refuter. But someone like United States Virgin Islands Representative Delegate Stacey Plaskett does not know how to do. She does not even know how to feign that, ladies and gentlemen. Because when Mr. Taibbi was addressing her, this bitch was just totally ignoring him and talking to her aides and her attaches and not paying attention to the word that he was saying, because she knew he was wrong, because she is reading a script that at the very mortal coil of her soul, she probably does not agree with. But for whatever bribed or blackmailed reason, she has decided to go along with these communist plans to destroy this nation. She is nothing but a skeleton of a destroyed soul. And we see it in her face and in her disdain and disrespect for her office. And as well, the witness testifying before her. Mr. Taibbi goes on to say, "I'm here today because a series of events that became a vote late last year. Are you interested in doing a deep dive into what censorship manipulation was going on at Twitter? A week later, the first to what became known as the Twitter Files report came out. It attracted intense public interest is an understatement. My computer looked like a Vegas slot machine to register 143 million impressions and 30.8 million engagements. A week after the first report, after Michael Schellenberger and other researchers joined the search of the files, we started to grasp the significance of the story. The original promise of the internet was that it might democratize the exchange of information globally. A free internet would overwhelm all control of information flow. Its very existence a threat to the anti-democratic forms of government everywhere. What we found in the files was a sweeping effort to reverse that promise and use machine learning and other tools to turn the internet into an instrument of censorship and social control." Well, you know, Mr. Taibbi, that sounds exactly like what they've turned our voting machines into. They've turned our voting machines into an instrument that censors our choice of elected representative. Right? And it obviously has social control, you know, parameters from there out. So, unfortunately, our own government appears to be playing a lead role. We saw the first mediation between Twitter executives before the 2020 election when we read things flagged by DHS are pleased. When we read things like flagged by the DHS that say, please the attached report from the FBI for potential misinformation. This was attached on Excel spreadsheets along with the names of accounts who were shortly suspended thereafter. Ranking member Plaskett, I would note the relationship of Twitter, the government, includes a list of tens of thousands of names on both the left and the right. The people affected include Trump supporters, but also left-wing like Truth Out leftivist South American channel, the Yellow Vest Movement, and a key part of the Twitter files. Neither left nor right censorship or telling the tale of indications between Twitter and the federal government across tens of thousands of emails led to a series of revelations. We summarized and submitted them to the committee in the form of Twitter files released to the public. This morning we learned Twitter file, Facebook, Google, and other companies developed a formal system for taking in moderation requests, or maybe a corner of government, from the FBI to DHS to HHS, the DOD, the Global Engagement Center, and even the CIA. Every government agency standing at Twitter, there were perhaps 20 plus parties into the same thing, including Stanford Election News Guard, the Global Disinformation Index, and many others. Many taxpayer-funded, but the focus of his best network, as Mike noted, is making lists of people whose opinions he believed, associations, or sympathies for misinformation and disinformation, or malinformation. The last term as a shifting euphemism for true pudding can be them. Undeniably, the making of such lists in the form of digital is a form of digital McCarthyism. Okay, I can't read the rest of this, guys, because the caption just does it no justice. But anyhow, y'all. So you had Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger, you know, and I wondered for a time if maybe Barry Weiss had been invited to participate in this event. But I have to be absolutely 100% honest with you guys. I don't know that I would want to see Barry Weiss before the Democrats who are tearing her down. You know, that would just totally ruin my, you know, vision of America. Barry Weiss versus the Democrats, the woman who cried at her desk so everyone in her office could, you know, pretentiously see where she stood, right? Going against the very people that she believes are better than Trump and here to save America, it would just destroy my vision of this country. You know, I cannot deal with someone like Barry Weiss being ripped asunder by the Democrats. I just can't, you know, so I don't know if she was invited. I think she's the one that brought Mr. Schellenberger onto the case. Again, not to belabor Representative Plaskett, but she was disgusting. You know, she seems to believe, and I guess this would be the belief of everyone on the side of the Democrats, because again, clearly what Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger were sharing before this subcommittee, as discovered in their investigations into the Twitter files, we're looking at something that is cross the aisle. We're looking at something that is nonpartisan, something that's bipartisan, that's something that shouldn't matter to all Americans and not just one political party. But the Democrats in this case, as led by ranking member Stacey Plaskett, and as immoralized by the rest of the Democrats on this subcommittee. These people don't give a damn about America. They don't give a damn about First Amendment rights. They don't give a damn about press rights. They do not care, ladies and gentlemen. They kept on saying that these were cherry-picked points, that everything that came out in the Twitter files was a narrative that was being spun by Elon Musk. Now, the only reason they could get away with that is because Musk said himself, I'm going to be a Republican. So he fed into the party politics. Are you listening, America? He fed into the party politics like that, right? Back to Representative Plaskett. Keeps on saying that this is Musk's talking points, which I really don't understand. She told Mr. Schellenberger and Mr. Taibbi 3 weeks ago we had actual Twitter execs, which amounted to what? Yoel Roth, the guy who wants a minor section on Grindr, right? You know, no, thank you, Yoel Roth. No, thank you. Okay, but apparently he showed them real evidence that Twitter was colluding with Trump and not the left or something like that. I don't know what she's saying. She's absolutely ridiculous. I just could not understand how what Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger and Ms. Weiss were releasing. I could not understand how that was a narrative for Elon Musk. It made absolutely no sense, especially when Elon Musk really doesn't appear to be on President Trump's side. You know what I mean? It makes no sense that these narratives were cherry-picked by Elon Musk just to what? Help President Trump? I mean, as far as I could tell, President Trump and Elon Musk don't exactly see eye to eye, you know? And then, you know, they're talking about whether or not Musk was a source and whether or not he gave them free access to everything or if he was just giving them select information. I'm kind of thinking like, hello? Representative Plaskett, Representative who are the other ones? Bishop, right? That was another one that was like a damn Mr. Representative Goldman. I was like, hello. They got rid of Jim Baker. Jim Baker was the one who was censoring and editing the Twitter files before they got to the reporters, right? Was it Jim Baker? Wasn't it Jim Baker? Jim Baker, James Baker, Jim James, same shit, right? You know, and you know, that guy, Elon Musk fired him. Elon Musk was like, oh, this guy who used to work for the FBI, a senior counsel, Jim Baker's now getting all the Twitter files before they go to the reporters to censor the stuff that's national security. Fire the bitch. And that is exactly what Elon Musk did. He fired that bitch. He said, bitch, you're gonna censor the information before it gets to the reporters? Bitch. Do I look like a bitch? Elon Musk said to James Baker, do I look like a bitch? That's what Elon Musk said. And then he fired him. I mean, he was fired. He was censoring the information that went to the reporters. That's why he was fired. I mean, he was kind of working beyond his pay grade. You know what I mean? Like, he was not there to be a curator of information. But I mean, I think that's why they hired him, actually, to be a curator of information. Interestingly enough. Anyways, guys, so we had a whole bunch of people that Schellenberger and Taibbi went through. We had first, I think, up Mike Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana. I don't know much about a lot of these people. I know that in looking into these people, a lot of them are within the 10-year range, okay? 6 years, 5 years, 3 years, 2 years, you know, but a lot of them are within 10 years of being elected into an office. Mike Johnson of Louisiana, I mean, honestly, in my notes, the only thing I wrote down was this man uses too much rouge. And I wondered whether or not Ali Akbar was his makeup artist, right? But I couldn't say too much. Let's see here. He was first elected in 2016. Right. So right up there when President Trump became president of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Some news on Representative Johnson. Johnson's bill would reauthorize illicit fentanyl's classification as a deadly substance. Let's see here. Oh, he was sued for medical malpractice. That was 3 days ago. Not good. I could sue for medical malpractice. Anyhow, so yeah, I don't have a whole lot of information on him. I really was thinking about like looking into all of these people on this subcommittee. There are some interesting people on this subcommittee. There are some interesting Democrats, and there are some, you know, go-getter Republicans. I mean, some people that I think might actually be fighting for America, but you know, it gets pretty slippery. Look at what's going on in Arizona. Look at everything that's coming out with this whole cartel thing. I mean, literally, we're seeing no representatives. We're seeing nobody want to do anything about it. And it's quite disheartening. So, you know, you never know. But, you know, like I said, on this subcommittee, some good peeps. You know, we had Jim Jordan, Kat Kamax on the subcommittee. Who else is on this subcommittee that I thought was worthy of Americans? I think that was it, just those two, you know. But then, I mean, like I said, there are other people. We of course had ridiculous Democrats. We had this Stephen Lynch of Massachusetts. Let me see if I've got him on the board here. Stephen Lynch. I don't have you here, Stephen Lynch. Stephen Lynch. What was going on with Lynch that I did not so much jive with? Lynch was doing a whole bunch of, was he doing the whole Russian collusion thing? There were a couple of these Democrat representatives that did the Russia collusion thing. And they started going into this whole, like, you know, kind of reverse CYA stuff with them, as far as that can goes. Let me see here, Stephen Lynch. Yeah, he's from Massachusetts. Stephen Lynch of Massachusetts. What you gotta say for yourself, jerk off? Okay, let's see here. And I'll pull this here. Oh yeah, there he is. 8th District of Massachusetts, which includes Brockton, Boston, Quincy, and Norwood. What was he going on about? He was going on about Yoel Roth and safety measures at Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, we could probably do better this way, like that. There we go. Okay. Let's see here. He says this. He says, there has been a suggestion here that the FBI and other government agencies pressured employees that Twitter, at Twitter to validate the foreign influence. When we had Mr. Roth, who is the former global head of trust and safety at Twitter, so we asked Twitter if there was pressure applied, and Mr. Roth said, I would not agree with that. The FBI, and this is his quote, the FBI was quite careful and quite consistent to request a review of the accounts and not to cross the line into advocating for Twitter to take any particular action. So that's what Twitter says about the actions of the FBI. These are the Twitter Mr. Taibbi in 2019 Counselor Robert Mueller equivocally found the Internet Research Agency, the same oligarchy runs, carried out an extensive social media disinformation campaign to help them then candidate Donald Trump and to hurt Hillary Clinton, and intelligence interfered with 2016 elections by a hack and release campaign damaging the campaign. These particular findings come on the heels of the unanimous assessment, part of the United States Intelligence Agency, that, quote, ordered an influence campaign in 2016 and the presidential election, quote. Anyways, so there you go. There's Mr. Stephen Lynch trying to get in to all of this with them about what was going on in 2016, 2020 in relationship to Russia. Makes no sense, ladies and gentlemen. But that was just another one of your losers going in on these two journalists. We had another one. It was Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And I just gotta say, guys, aside from asking some of the most inane questions, what the heck was going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Like, you know, if her budding eyelashes were not animated, I would have believed that her eyeballs were painted onto her eyelids. She looked like she just came off of some kind of crazy, you know, binge on some kind of, I don't know what was going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, guys. I don't know what was going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I do not know what was going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But you look at that woman's eyes and you know that there was something going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, ladies and gentlemen. We had, let's see here, Representative Dan Bishop. He's a Republican in North Carolina. He did a really good job. He referenced Twitter files number 15. He and Mr. Taibbi had a very good back and forth regarding the Global Engagement Center, ladies and gentlemen, regarding a book called Information War, written by a man named Richard Stengel. Some stuff I will probably look into, ladies and gentlemen. But that was a Republican. You know, the conservative Republican members on this committee had really good interactions with these witnesses. I guess that's to the point of someone like ranking member, you know, Plaskett, who's like, well, you're a Republican witness, so we're going to crucify you. But they did point out overwhelmingly that Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger are not of the conservative ilk. Nor are they registered Republicans. Representative Sylvia Garcia of Texas made a total embarrassment out of the state of Texas and was the most obvious when it came to relinquishing her ulterior motive for contact with these people. I mean, all that she wanted to do was to prove that Mr. Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger shared all of their information with Republicans before the Democrats. She brought it all back down to partisan party lines, to divisiveness. And indeed, that's the way she's groomed. I mean, she's a new congresswoman, representative. She was a state senator for X amount of years. She was in state government in Houston, Texas for X amount of years. She's groomed for this, which is just do as you're told. There's someone here who's going to tell you what to do. And as long as you do what you're told, you're going to get reelected because you are selected, Sylvia Garcia. Ain't no one gonna elect your dank ass, bitch, right? So anyway, Sylvia Garcia, you're an embarrassment to this state of Texas and this nation. There was one impressive Texas representative, but not because he did the right thing. Only because he should have been in Lion Cassidy Hutchinson's place during the impeachment trials because he's a good actor. Okay. He's a good actor. That was Representative Colin Allred of Texas, Democrat. Good actor. Like, this is the kind of person that you need as a, how would you put this? This is the kind of person that you need as an infiltrated turncoat representative of the people. Because this man knows how to memorize his lines and internalize those lines. He memorized and internalized his lines so much to the point that when the witnesses were asking him questions, he shut them down and was like, "It's not your turn. You can't ask questions. That's not how this works. I thought you knew how this works. You don't get to ask the questions. I do. I reclaim my time." And then he would pick up, like, from mid-sentence, the rest of the sentence. Like, I mean, it was so, and he was like, "My name is Representative Colin Allred of the state of, it's not your time. Don't you know how this works? You ask questions. Of the state of Texas, and I represent the city of Houston." Like that. I mean, mid-sentence, like in mid-thought, and then, you know, he just carries out his thought. Because he's reading a script, because he knows how to memorize and internalize. Can I suggest for all of the fake America DC scouts out there who are looking for fake politicians to put on their dole? You need to look for people who know how to memorize and internalize their shit, because otherwise they're going to end up looking like Wendy Rogers in her last district meeting, where her character changes. And she turns on her constituents. And she is no longer the employee, but she's the employer. Hey, I'm not going to talk to you until you ask a question. "What's your question?" says Wendy Rogers to her district. "What's your question?" "I don't want to hear pontificating," says Wendy Rogers. "What's your question?" Her character changes because she is not speaking from a place of truth to her people. In her district. Period. Anyways, so there you go. Representative Colin Allred. Good job on internalizing and memorizing. We had Thomas Massey of Kentucky, Republican. He had a good rapport with the speakers. Representative Issa California actually surprised me a bit. I was expecting him to be rather a rhino, but I mean, you can have, ladies and gentlemen, can I introduce you to the concept of stealth rhinos again? They exist, right? Anyways, but Representative Darrell Issa did do a pretty good job when he was addressing the reporters. I was surprised with his engagement. I was expecting him to be rather rhino but he wasn't. He was fair and balanced. Let me see real quick. Hold on. Because I spilled water on a lot of my notes, that's why it's kind of like, I had a lot of notes for this, but let me see here. Did I have anything for Mr. Issa? No, he did a good job. go back and listen to Mr. Isa's. He asked them. He asked them a bunch of pretty good questions. Anyways, okay, so sorry guys. Pardon me. Mervin Radlong, dug-a-dung, dug-a-dung. In addition to that, Representative Dan Goldman. Let me tell you about Dan Goldman. That guy's a little bit tragic. Okay. Dan Goldman, first of all, he appears to like hit on Mr. Schellenberger, right? I mean, totally hits on him. I mean, like Mr. Schellenberger and Mr. Goldman, while their ties might both be of the duotone white and purple, they look nothing alike, okay? And Goldman's like, well, Mr. Schellenberger, the first thing I'd like to do is lick your butt over the color of tie that you're wearing. And I was like, really? Okay, Goldman. But, you know, Goldman, Democrat, New York, okay, did exactly what you might expect him to do, which is just totally go in on them and just be totally like, what the hell is this guy talking about? There was something else with Goldman that I had seen. Oh, where was it? I think I posted it on my Twitter. And I might say now, here and now, ladies and gentlemen, since I am on my Twitter, I do have an active Twitter account that is at Twitter at the C Report, TheCReport, all one word, the C Report. Follow me at the C Report, ladies and gentlemen, on Twitter. And, you know, we'll have a whole bunch of fun. But, oh, this is what it was. Okay, so Dan Goldman, right, of New York, had put this thread out on Twitter. It's called Thread on Russian Disinformation. Okay. And so I made a comment on it. So this is going to give you an idea of where this man is on the political spectrum. My comment was, wow, this dude put a lot of thought into how hashtag Hunter's laptop was hashtag Russian disinformation. Even though that has never been proven. Maybe Russian disinfo is just code for just use Russia against Trump. And Dan Goldman on his Twitter account had this thread on Russian disinformation. It says, recently at DNI, Radcliffe asserted that Hunter Biden's laptop is not part of a Russian disinformation campaign. But Radcliffe misses the point. It is part of Russia's efforts to interfere in the election. Let me explain. So this is the guy who hits on Michael Schellenberger, okay? This is from October 2020. Daniel Goldman says, This is what we know as fact. One, Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help Trump. You could literally replace the country of Russia with like probably a dozen other countries that interfered in the 2016 election to help Trump or anyone else, even Hillary Clinton. But you don't hear them saying that shit, do you? Right? Two, says Dan Goldman, this is what we know is fact. Russia never stopped trying to undermine our democracy and to support Trump. You could say the same thing again about a dozen other nations and both candidates, right? And three, says Dan Goldman, Russia is trying to interfere in the 2020 election to support Trump. Radcliffe's own agency said so. Radcliffe's own agency said a lot of things that make no sense for democratic actions, right? Goldman goes on to say, four, Russia at war with Ukraine has been promoting a disinformation campaign to smear Joe and Hunter Biden with bogus allegations related to Ukraine. That was another trend that I noticed from this hearing. It was that a lot of the Democrats were running interference for Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and were trying to plant CYA methods in order to cover, of course, themselves for the things to come. So he says that Russia's trying to put these bogus allegations on Joe and Hunter Biden. He says Giuliani and Trump latched onto this sham allegation and tried to extort Ukraine to announce an investigation into the Bidens, which, incidentally, is what the Bidens did. They blackmailed Ukraine. Now, the running narrative is that the reason why the European Union and the United Nations and the IMF urged Joe Biden on behalf of Barry Obama to blackmail the president, President Poroshenko of Ukraine, into firing the investigator general, Poroshenko was the president, and it starts with a Y, doesn't it? What was the name of that guy's name? Yanukovych was the other president. Let's see here. Guys, hold on. I just need to get his name. I know it's Poroshenko and his name is Shokin. Viktor Shokin. Thank you. Anyways, okay, Viktor Shokin. So you have people like Dan Goldman covering for Biden, and I mean, he did it in his entire presentation. Look, watch. So this is a thread that he put on Twitter in 2020, right? Giuliani and Trump latched onto the sham allegation and tried to extort Ukraine to announce an investigation into the Bidens. Trump was impeached over this abuse of power, and the impeachment definitively determined that Biden acted appropriately at all times. No, President Trump was acquitted. How did this definitively determine that Biden acted appropriately? What freaking timeline is this fop Dan Goldberg living in? He says, yet Giuliani continued to promote the disinformation campaign and coordinate his efforts with a known Russian agent. Yet the MSM and the deep state and the establishment continued to promote this disinformation campaign and coordinate efforts with known Russian agent, what, by the name of Christopher Steele? Okay, we all know. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Goldman goes on to say, Giuliani and Trump allies point to the contents of the laptop to support the bogus allegations against the Bidens promoted by Russia and its agent working with Giuliani. The laptop does not support those allegations, which are still and will always be false. Wrong! I'm just going to put that wrong. This guy promoted Russian disinformation. And finally, Dan Goldman says, the laptop is therefore part and parcel of Russia's disinformation campaign designed to illegally interfere in the 2020 election in support of Trump. End. And then some idiots all, it's so clear. So this is GOP corruption. You're an idiot, Scar. Anyways, Scar, who's a pianist, a singer, a songwriter, an agroecology enthusiast, climate crisis, anti-racist, mother, abortion feminist, womanist. You're an idiot, Scar. Anyways, so that's what Representative Dan Goldman had to say. 2 years, 3 years ago, 3 years ago. Okay, 2.5 years ago, 2 years and change, right? If you want to count the months, count the months. Here at this hearing, all he did was a lot of the same. All he did was cover the ass of President Biden, his family, the Biden criminal cartel, and what was going on in Burisma. I mean, I quote, this was from Representative Daniel Goldman. Are you aware, he says to Matt Taibbi and Mr. Schellenberger, are you aware that the FBI had nothing to do with Twitter's decision to pause the New York Post story on Hunter Biden's laptop? To which Mr. Schellenberger was like, I'm not aware of that. Everyone knows the story, Daniel Goldman. You can't just insert your own perspective on truth and facts In other words, Daniel Goleman, you can't be a perspective queen and say, well, my perspective, it was Russian disinformation, when the facts tell you your perspective is wrong. Sorry, that's not the way this world works, okay? And everyone knows the facts. And, you know, the exchange between Mr. Tybee, Mr. Schellenberger, with yourself, Mr. Goldman, you should very well know your numbers up. And people like you and Plaskett and the rest of the Democrats that did a deplorable job, all of you guys who are not even questioning the witnesses, but just making declarations to the witnesses, which is not your job. You're there to investigate and ask questions, not to make declarations and tell them to shut up and know their place. You're there to dig for information, not to tell the witnesses what they know and or believe as a matter of record. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the most disgusting thing about this entire hearing, which I think is resonating in a lot of corners of people's souls, minds, and consciences today, because this was disgusting. And I am fighting for someone who's not even a Trump supporter and pointing out how inappropriate the Democrat Party was in addressing these witnesses at this select subcommittee hearing. Ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I think that's about all I got to say about that. We had Matt Gaetz talk. We had Elise Stefanik talk. The only thing I had to say about Elise Stefanik is she looks like she's worn out for the beginning of the legislative season. I mean, either she needs more cucumbers in the house or she needs more highlighter and concealer to hide those shiners. I don't know what's going on with that woman. Kat Kamik spoke and asked questions. Big fan of Kat Kamik. So, you know, there were a couple of people there. One or two people there that I think at least they shouldn't be there. Kat Kamik, Elise Stefanik, Jim Jordan, they're all there illegally. Everyone is there illegally. It was all uncertified. All the machines were uncertified. Get over it, America. Everyone is there unconstitutionally and unlawfully. Well, unlawfully they're there. Okay. Even the two good guys in the audience, right? They all did a good job, but you know, some of you guys in the House who are playing the American people have a little bit more integrity on the outside than others do. Okay? So I don't know how else to say about that. I wanted to go over Twitter files number 18 and 19 with you guys, but this hearing took over the precedence of that. And there's so much more going on, too. But thanks for tuning in to another episode of the C Report. Thank you for being here. If you're with us on Spotify or Anchor.fm and any of the other podcast channels, Podbean, Podbay, all the other ones, all of the above, thank you so much. Make sure you follow. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you share. We're also over at rumble.com, pilled.net, and also, do not forget, ladies and gentlemen, follow us at Twitter at the C Report, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll catch up with you guys later. Thanks for being here again. I've been your host, Mr. C, as ever and as usual. I'll be back shortly. Till then, be safe, be blessed. God bless America. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.